Utah Public Radio and the state's public broadcasters bring you Vote Utah 2012 and a debate between Utah's gubernatorial candidates. Support comes from AARP Utah, publishing voter guides for 25 years. Guides and information on state and federal races are available at aarp.org/yourvote or 866-448-3616. And from USU's Department of Political Science, committed to improving the community, the state, the nation, and beyond, and supporting UPR's coverage of the Utah legislature. Information is at politicalscience.usu.edu. We go now to KUED 7 Studios.
Vote Utah is a partnership between Utah's public broadcasters.
I'm David Magleby, the founder of BYU Center for the Study of Elections and Democracy. We're proud to be part of this gubernatorial debate this year, and choosing governors is a very important act for all voters, in part because state government is a unit of government that's close to voters in things like education, highways, prisons, and many other ways. This contest between Peter Cook and Gary Herbert is going to be a very important one.
Gary Herbert is no stranger to the issues facing Utah. Born and raised in Utah County, he made a name for himself there building a real estate business. But in 2004, he traveled north to the Lieutenant Governor's office when voters elected him as John Huntsman's second-in-command. Since taking the helm of the Beehive State, Herbert says he added $200 million to the state's education budget. But reports show the money Utah spends on each student still dropped more than 8% since Herbert took office. The reports call the plunge unprecedented in Utah history. He also caught some heat for signing a law that would have allowed state officials to restrict access to many government records. Coming from small business, Herbert says he makes the economy a top priority. And state unemployment fell from 8 to 6% under his watch. After winning a special election in 2010, he is now seeking his first full term as Utah's governor. Jeff Merrill, Vote Utah 2012.
The challenger in this year's race for governor is Peter Cook, a real estate business owner who says Utah needs a watchdog. As a former state director of economic development, he accuses current Governor Gary Herbert of hurting local businesses by making them compete with large out-of-state companies moving to Utah. Although, for the past year, Utah ranked second in the nation for job growth and ninth for lowest unemployment. Cook also says Utah's education system is in embarrassing need of reform and plans to change the state's large class sizes and lowest per pupil spending in the nation. It's been 32 years since Utahns elected a Democrat for governor, but this two-star general says the founding fathers never intended for Utah to be a one-party state. And he says he's here as the check and the balance. Lauren Simpson, Vote Utah 2012.
And I'm Ken Verdoya. Representing Utah's public broadcasters, I welcome you to this debate between candidates for governor of Utah. Prior to airtime, a coin toss determined Governor Gary Herbert will provide the first 60-second opening statement. Governor?
Well, thank you, Ken, and thanks to KUED and all the PBS affiliates that are part of this debate. Good to be with my friend Peter Cook. As most people know, when I came into office, I took over governorship at a very difficult time in our state's history. Probably the worst economic downturn in our state since the Great Depression. At my inauguration, I talked about my priorities, that what we would focus on. One would be economic development and job creation. Two would be education. Three would be energy development. And fourth would be efficiency in state government. I am pleased to report 3 years later that we've had success in every area, in every measurable area. The economy is back on the right path, growing again. Our unemployment rate went from 8.3 to 5.8% unemployment. Education, we're pulling together, putting more money into public education than ever before. We've had a 10-year energy plan, which we're developing our natural resources in reasonable and rational, responsible ways. And state government now is more efficient than ever before, open and transparent, and getting good bang for the taxpayer's buck, recognized as the best managed state in America. I thank you for your support and look for your vote on November the 6th.
And now a 60-second opportunity for Peter Cook. General Cook.
This election is about salesmanship versus leadership. Salesmanship is selling the present. Leadership is planning for the future. The governor is the CEO of our state. His job is to run the state effectively, not to take credit for jobs only business can bring. Right now, the part-time legislature is running the full-time governor. Never in our history has a governor had so many audits by his own party. Utah was audited, number one, taxpayers lost $13 million. The Liquor Commission was audited twice. The Department of Health is being audited. 800,000 identities were stolen, a potential loss of $100 million. The Department of Workforce Services is also being audited. And we just found out radioactive waste was illegally buried in Utah, and our governor didn't even know. The choice is clear. We can choose salesmanship or leadership. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Our ground rules are going to be pretty simple today. The questions for the candidates will come directly from our studio audience, which draws heavily from students at the University of Utah and also features representatives of research and voter information organizations. Each candidate will have up to 90 seconds for their initial response to the question, and after each has answered, rebuttal time will be available, only to speak directly to arguments made by their opponent. That said, let's make the best use of our time. I talked about several of the organizations that are involved. One of the organizations is the Utah Foundation, which has done a masterful job identifying issues that are on the minds of voters this year. They're represented in our audience today by Steve Cruz. Steve, good to have you with us again. You might as well offer that first question.
It's great to be here, Ken. Thanks. As a young and rapidly growing state, one of the fastest in the nation, we have some great needs for funding education, transportation infrastructure, and other public services. But this week, Utah Foundation released a brief showing that our tax burden has fallen from 12th highest in the nation to 31st in the nation. What is your approach on making Utah's tax system provide adequate funding for these pressing needs of being such a young and growing state?
And the first 90-second opportunity will go to Governor Herbert.
Well, I don't think it's a bad thing that our tax burden has gone down. We have certainly needs out there, and the ability to extract revenue from the populace is certainly a tax system. We've been competitive because we've reduced our tax rates. We have states next to us that have zero income tax rate. And so in order to be competitive in the marketplace, it's necessary for us to be competitive on our tax rates. How you pay the bills is by growing the economy. We focus laser-like on creating economic opportunity, empowerment of the private sector, getting government in its proper role, and I've used the phrase, get off your backs and out of your wallets, and let the private sector expand the economy. It's the rising tide that raises all boats on the pond. It provides opportunities for people to have jobs and pay for their own bills, and it provides revenue to the state government coffers to pay for the services that we, the people, think are important. And guess what? It's working. This last year, we put nearly $200 million of new money to go along with already $3.3 billion of money in our public education system and put some money into higher education as well. So that came from an expanding, growing economy. And that's the important part. You either, with a finite amount of money, there's only three ways you can pay for the services. Either cut something else out, or you raise taxes, or you, in fact, grow the economy. I've chosen to do the latter, and it's working for Utah as we've been recognized as the most business-friendly place in America, and our economy is one of the best in America, if not the best.
General Cook, your 90-second opportunity.
Yes. First of all, the Utah Foundation has made a really important point. Since the mid-1995, our state has neglected education. We have lost, you know, taken our taxes down, and put money into infrastructure. And that has caused our education, which is the number one reason why businesses come to our state. And if we don't take care of education, we as a state cannot move forward. And one of the most important thing to do is, in my administration, within the first 120 days, I'm going to show how our state moves from 50 to 30. And that means that we have to put everything on the board. Look at every part of our taxes, from the earmarks that have come, from exemptions, and from expenditures. Because without education, without us looking at that, we lose. And I think the most important thing that this time for all of us is to realize we have kicked this can too long. We have pushed it to the side. And I'll tell you, as a director of economic development, and have brought businesses to our state, with a depleting education system, the worst in the country, from the governor's gone from 50 to 50, We need to do something immediately about education in our state, and that will cause the economic development growth for the future.
Rebuttal time. Governor Herbert, your first opportunity.
It sounds like General Cook wants to raise taxes. There's a reason why the UEA has endorsed my efforts for reelection. They recognize that I've been at the forefront in bringing people together for education. We have a very diverse philosophy out there. For the first time, we're working together, and we're putting more money into education. I can't answer for 1997, but for the last 3 years that I've been in charge, we've increased education funding by 2% the first year, 4% last year, and 5% this year. That's why we have the business community and the education community rallying around my reelection efforts and endorsing my campaign.
General Cook, your opportunity.
First of all, I didn't say anything about raising taxes. I say make education a priority, which you haven't. Second is, you may have the union, the UEA, I have the teachers. You've got an F in helping out education in this state, and $200 million cannot even take our state from 50 to 49. And that is because there's been neglect over the last 17 years. And by the way, you know, Governor, you've been in for 8 years, not just the last two.
This issue is too important for me to let a time constraint immediately move us on. I want to extend comments for both of you. Another 30 seconds for you, Governor, and then another 30 seconds for you, General Cook.
You know, I've had great success in bringing people together. I've created what's called the Governor's Education Excellence Commission, which has brought people from both parties. It's brought people from the schools themselves, from a private business. And together we've had 16 different initiatives that have passed unanimously on a very diverse group, 15 of them passed by the legislature. To indicate that this is not a priority is to, in fact, belie history. Education is my number one priority in my budget. And that's why I've got the support of teachers and of business leaders, of people from diverse backgrounds, recognizing that we're leading out on education. And we're having great results. We have over 2,000 more people taking the advanced placement courses. We're having great results in our ACT test scores. For those who take it, our ACT test scores now are eighth in the nation. We're getting good results. To think that somehow this is not a priority for me or for the legislature is to ignore what the historical facts of the 3 years I've been in charge of the budget.
Another 45 seconds for you, General.
I just got to go with the facts, Governor. It just hasn't occurred. You got to put your money where your mouth is. You've got to be able to put that and make that a priority. We have to face this issue. It hasn't. I don't care how many commissions you have. You've gone from 50 to 50. We keep on going downhill. And we are letting our children down, our businesses down, and that's why Prosperity 2020 should come out of the governor's office, not out of the business community, because they were trying to give you a message that we needed to make a change.
There are many additional issues to consider. Let's turn to one of our students from the University of Utah. Your subject turns on the land of Utah.
Yes, Utah is known for its unique geographical features and its open spaces. And I want to know, as governor, how do you plan on maintaining a balance between developing energy but still preserving Utah's land, creating jobs, stimulating the tourism industry, and still maintaining a healthy life for those Utah residents?
And General Cook, you'll have the first 90-second opportunity.
That is a very important question because Utah is defined by its quality of life. As you know, I have not supported the land grab, and let me tell you why. Because if you were to look at that as a business transaction and putting all our environment in jeopardy, and that's why the retail associations, the people in the recreational business are behind me and supporting me, because it doesn't have a plan. You take, for example, it takes $300 million a year we get from the federal government, $50 million comes in, that's $350 million. And then you add on to that, if you're going to make the transaction and sell it, you would, as a businessman, would have to put that in escrow. That would be your $2 billion in escrow that you would have to put to even try to bring that land. And at the same time, with no plan to get water and infrastructure, it doesn't solve the issues for education because that would take 15 or 20 years. And then we've kicked the can one more time down the road. I think the most important thing is what we did as Democrats under Matheson. It was the Sagebrush Rebellion. And guess what? Under the Cook and Rampton will do the sagebrush too. And that's to negotiate and work with the government to be able to have a balanced future. And if we lose our environment, we lose a big part of who we are in this state.
Governor Herbert, your 90-second opportunity.
part of my administration's efforts have been in all issues to bring some balance to the equation, to make sure that we have a balanced approach on the public lands is what we're trying to do. In fact, I created the Balanced Resource Council. That's the name of it. And the chairman of it's Ted Wilson, one of the leading environmentalists in our state's history, to see if we could find the appropriate balance to go out and protect those pristine areas that need protecting to maintain for outdoor recreation. We recognize that tourism and travel is a big part of our economy, about $6.5 billion. We also recognize the need there is to access our natural resources. We put together, in fact, a 10-year energy plan under an all-of-the-above scenario to see what can we do to go out there and access those God-given natural resources, particularly energy in the state of Utah, and do it in a balanced way where we can be good stewards of the earth. With using new technologies, we can, in fact, have minimal disturbance of the environment out there, protect the flora and the fauna, and access still the energy that we're capable of doing. Heavens knows that it gives us competitive advantage economically. Steve Forbes, when he named us the number one state in America for business, cited the fact that in Utah, we have our energy costs, which are 31% below the national average. Not only are we creating jobs, accessing our energy capability, but we're also, in fact, giving competitive advantage for manufacturing business on the Wasatch Front. So we are approaching it in a very balanced way, working in negotiation with the federal government to manage those public lands appropriately.
Rebuttal time. General Cook, your first 30-second opportunity.
Well, that's why I'm running for office, is to bring balance back to state government. And I just must say to you, Governor, that the whole approach has not been balanced, because those people in the recreational industry are absolutely upset with this. There isn't a clear understanding, as I just said, as a business person, you know, how in the world can you take on this thing without understanding all the possibilities that make it work? And I'll tell you, the people of this state want clean air, and they want to protect their environment, and they want a strong education, and that's what I'll do.
Governor Herbert, your opportunity.
Well, I agree with everything you said, and we're not just talking about it, we're doing it. We're actually putting processes in place to get those kinds of outcomes. And we have three arrows in the quiver when it comes to the public land and management. The first is negotiation. We've negotiated some good opportunities in bipartisan ways with the public lands. We also have the ability to legislate. The Washington County Lands Bill is a perfect example of what we're able to create in Washington County on the public land issue. But last, we will litigate. We have roads and rights of way out there that need, in fact, litigation, because we cannot agree on whether they are roads or not. And short of an agreement and a negotiated settlement, you have to go to court. So all three are part of our process to make sure we have proper balance and that Utah has input into the management of our public lands.
We're going to turn to a subject that really touches on one of the big three. I mean, when it comes down to humans, it's food, clothing, and shelter. And your question is on housing.
Yes. Utah spends less state dollars on affordable housing than just about any state in the country. What would you do as governor to increase resources for affordable housing, and especially for low-income housing?
Governor Herbert, the first 90-second opportunity.
Well, I'm a free market person. I believe the best thing we can do for anybody to create the most available, best quality housing for the most people at the lowest cost is a free market competition environment. And so I think we work with our local governments to make sure that there is competition, that zoning doesn't get in the way of a developer, an investor, to in fact develop housing. Sometimes zoning gets in the way of how many units you can have per acre, makes things more expensive and less affordable. The best thing we can do is, again, provide opportunities for the marketplace to answer the demands of the market. And as somebody who's been involved in real estate for most of my adult life, I probably have a greater appreciation for the importance of people being able to live the American dream, which includes having a roof over your head and owning your own piece of Mother Earth in real estate. We've had some great opportunities with our state government to work with the federal government on some different housing programs with our Utah Housing Authority to provide lower interest rate loans that are available for people in the private sector. I think that's been very helpful to keep the marketplace going. And we're just coming out now, and if you saw on KSL News the other last night, our housing market has recovered. We are back to where we were when we went into the Great Recession, and we see prices now starting to stabilize and growing again. So real estate is a key issue when it comes to the economy. It's the first thing to get hurt, and it's the last thing to recover. The fact that we've seen it recover now is a good indication that we, in fact, have turned the corner when it comes to economic growth again.
General Cook, your 90-second opportunity.
You bet. For the last 30 years, that is what I've chosen to do in my occupation, is to provide affordable housing for this state. I had in the time, I can't remember now, but it's 15 of the first in the United States. It was done by public-private partnerships. The ability to help us to take a need for, a lot of times, single mothers, a lot of time for people that were just beginning their occupations in life to be able to move forward. That public-private partnership helped to bring affordable housing to many who moved on and helped our state to be able to be the beautiful state it is. I would encourage, I'm an advocate for affordable housing. It is the most important piece of a product that helps those who are just starting out in life and those who have had some disadvantages come to them. So as your governor, I will really make that an emphasis and continue that public-private partnership, which I think is really critical.
Well, let me ask, gentlemen, is there a need for rebuttal on that? I think you both have made a pretty straightforward statement. Let me come down here, which may stir the waters a little bit. Oh, no, let me come down. That's the, for those listening on radio, that was the sound of my bones creaking. But in the front row, a question on the subject of healthcare costs, I believe.
Yes. As a United Way Board of Directors member, and as a supporter of many nonprofit organizations in Utah, I'm concerned with growing health care costs. Despite Utah having some of the lowest health care costs in the country, insurance premiums continue to grow at a faster rate than family income. If elected governor, what will you do to contain health care costs in Utah?
And General Cook, you have the first 90-second opportunity.
Well, thank you. First of all, I believe in supporting the expansion of Medicaid, as you know, right now is a critical issue to all of us. And we have till November the 16th to make that response. It's a great investment for the state of Utah because only 6% of our actual expenditures go towards Medicaid. I think as a small business person, I know that feeling. I've been there. I've had to meet those really demands of that high expenditure of health insurance. And I think I'm opposed to Senate Bill 208, which would put the state, which the governor signed, which would put the state behind the rest of the country, both in Medicare and Medicaid. I do believe that the state should be able to manage its own opportunities, and that can be done if we have our own money. And I think that's something we would have to negotiate with the federal government. But it's really important for us to address this issue. A state that can handle education, a state that can handle the issue of health care will be a state that will grow in the future. And we have to meet that issue head on.
Governor Herbert, your 90-second opportunity.
Thank you. Well, health care certainly is an important issue, and it's one of the most complicated and emotional issues of our time. The Affordable Care Act has divided this nation in ways we have not seen, save for abortion and the Vietnam War. It's been so emotional because we have not got any kind of bipartisan effort. It's been partisan from the beginning, and states have not been invited even to the table to give input on how the Affordable Care Act should be implemented. We don't have answers to questions today about the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. Utah has been at the forefront of health care reform. We started way before President Obama took office. We've been cited by both parties as an example of good quality health care. We have the lowest cost health care in America at about the fifth or sixth rated best quality. So we're doing something right here in Utah. We have had our second annual healthcare summit designed, in fact, to address issues which the Affordable Care Act doesn't, like what can we do to control the cost of healthcare? The Affordable Care Act, all it does is talk about who's going to pay for it. There's costs associated. When we look at healthcare, we've got to look at it under the umbrella of budget. Can we afford it? It might be a good idea, but can we afford it? I hate to correct my good friend Peter Cook, but there's no deadline on the Medicaid expansion, November 16th. I don't know where that's coming from. We can do it this year, next year, 4 years from now, if we decide to do it all. But there's a cost to it. And the question is, can we afford it? Clearly, we want to make sure that those who are most vulnerable amongst us, in fact, are in fact taken care of. The good news is we have a healthier economy. The healthier we are is a reflection of the wealthier we are. So having a healthy economy, in fact, has a reflection on the health of our populace.
We now have opportunity for rebuttal time. And let me refocus the question a little bit as you consider your rebuttal time. How would a person sitting at home listening to the debate or viewing this debate come to the conclusion that voting for you or you would make a difference in their health care situation. Is it possible? Does a governor make that type of difference? And if so, how would you make that difference? General Cook first.
Yes. First of all, the United Way has been off this issue for a long period of time and gave some of the greatest recommendations to the state legislature, and none of them were accepted. To me, this issue is another issue that we can't keep kicking down the road. You know, I hate to say it, but the governor, there is a deadline. On November the 16th, you have to submit how you're going to react to the Affordable Care Act. And we have to meet that. And I feel that one of the most important things is I will listen to the community. And this issue on Medicaid, golly, you know, Governor Walker's always supported me. The American Medical Association is moving forward on the Medicaid. They know that's the right way to go. And we keep hearing the same thing. I haven't got enough information. I don't know where we're going with this issue yet, and other states are moving out. And you can see by the way the people are supporting the concept of Medicaid is that we need to get behind this or the state will fall behind.
And Governor, I'll give you another 45 seconds.
Well, again, November 16th has nothing to do with Medicaid expansion. It has to do with whether we're going to keep our own exchange, which we've started. We were the originators of Interconnect with what we call the exchange. And that's the only issue that we've got to decide whether we do that or have the federal people come in and do their own exchange. We clearly need flexibility. It is about partnership. I've talked about unprecedented partnerships in the beginning of my administration. We're doing it better and more than any administration previous to my time. There's a private sector responsibility. Certainly, as we have monies that come to us in the federal Medicaid program, we need to administer those as best we can. The reason we want to have 208 signed is because it gives us block grant opportunities. It gives us more flexibility to find innovative ways to spend the taxpayers' dollars more effectively and more efficiently. It's going to be a partnership with the government having a role to play and the private sector and more charitable care, people stepping up and helping us, again, protect those that are most vulnerable amongst us.
Well, we have reached the midpoint of our debate time, and I want to take a minute to provide additional information on our Vote Utah election information services this year. We will be right back.
You're listening to a Vote Utah 2012 debate heard on Utah Public Radio. Support comes from AARP Utah, publishing voter guides for 25 years. Guides and information on state and federal races are available at aarp.org/yourvote or 866-448-3616. And from USU's Department of Political Science, committed to improving the community, the state, the nation, and beyond, and supporting UPR's coverage of the Utah Legislature. Information is at politicalscience.usu.edu.
Hello, I'm Terry Gilday. I'd like to talk to you about additional information available to you during this election season. Utah's public broadcasters have come together to share election and political content at voteutah.org so you, the voter, can get the best election coverage the state's public broadcasting has to offer, all on one website. VoteUtah.org also has voter information such as district maps, historical facts, and links to relevant election-based websites. We also link to our Facebook page where you can join the conversation. The Vote Utah partnership of Utah's public broadcasters is committed to providing the in-depth election coverage you demand. Join us today at voteutah.org.
And returning once again to our studio audience, the first opportunity to respond to this question will go to Governor Herbert and your question.
As you know, Governor, Utah is one of 12 states that has in-state college tuition for undocumented students. How and what will you do to protect that law here in Utah? And do you support a federal DREAM Act?
I support the law we have in Utah, and I think it's worked well for us. Immigration is a significantly difficult issue. Again, it's very emotional, and it's complicated. We've worked together to come up with a kind of a broad approach to immigration reform in Utah based on a rule of law, but with a compassionate component part to it to make sure that we keep families together and even offering a guest worker permit. The good news for us is, one, we've heightened the dialogue, so there's more discussion about this, I think, which is needful. We all recognize that absence of the federal government, we have some significant problems with immigration in this state and in this country. We hope to get the federal government off the sidelines and into the game. Our approach in Utah has received national attention, and most all of it positive. We've had nobody that's boycotted our businesses. We have nobody boycotting our conventions like they've had in other states. We've got our agricultural produce has been able to be harvested as opposed to other states where it's been rotting in the ground. And we have nobody boycotting our church's missionary programs, whether a Catholic, Protestant, or the LDS church. And so on balance, I think we've done a really good job here in Utah of addressing a very complicated issue that's been neglected by the federal government. Again, our in-state tuition program, I think it's worked very well for us, and I see no reason to change it.
General Cook, your 90-second opportunity to respond.
Yes, I think you had two questions. We fight for tuition? Yes. Two, do I believe in the Dream Act? Yes. Now, another thing I want to also say, an important piece is not only have education, but minority business opportunities. When I was the Director of Economic Development for the state of Utah, we had a minority business program that helped those who are just beginning in this country and all those to have a way to start their own business. I would reinstate that. This governor has taken those minority business things out of his operation. The second thing is I have signed the compact, which is important, and I think that is a way of showing how we will handle the future with immigration. The governor has refused to sign that. So the important piece is our economy, our whole state is changing, and we need to adapt to it. It's what a great culture we have, what a great state we have, and how diverse we are. Let's use that diversity. Let's bring it around. Let's be able to build a state that shows compassion, a state that shows that we can work together and to be able to make a big difference instead of, again, splitting and dividing. And that is horrible for any state. And I think under our administration, that's what you will see, and the reemergence of a real exciting part of the minority community, not only coming out of college, but those in the technical schools and elsewhere.
Governor, need for rebuttal time on this?
Yeah, I think there is. Again, I think it's a distortion to say that somehow I don't support the Utah Compact. I put out prior to the Compact my own six guiding principles. We're trying to shepherd things through the legislature. It was appropriate that I stay, in fact, out of that because I'd already proffered my own solutions. We certainly have not backed off on our minority involvement and outreach. We meet with the minority chambers of commerce and minority groups all the time. We've expanded our community and culture to not just having four silos, but having 22 to 25 people that come together to actually outreach into the minority community more than we've ever done before in our history. Our efforts, in fact, are bringing us together, having success, and having economic opportunity and growth that's taking place that benefits everybody, including our minority population. We're having great success.
General Cook, your rebuttal opportunity.
My rebuttal to this is, it's real simple. Governor, sign the compact. That is showing unity right off the bat. Business and Chamber of Commerce, all the different leaders and church organizations have signed that. By signing that, you bring unity. And that's an important piece on this issue. There are so many more other important issues that we have to really discuss in this state. Like I said, make education a priority. And this issue has divided our state. And I think we've seen the leaders of our community and religious groups say, let's be one. So simple, Governor, there's no distortion. Sign it or not.
Let's come back to our studio audience. Another question. Your question turns, you're representing Voices for Utah Children, another one of the research organizations that has been invited to participate today. And your question is on childhood poverty, I believe.
Yes, thank you. Despite economic growth in Utah, one out of six children are currently living in poverty, an increase of 45% since 2000. Children in poverty struggle academically, are more likely to become pregnant as teens, enter the juvenile justice system, and live in poverty as adults. As governor, what do you propose to do to help these kids and ensure that they become productive contributors to our economy as adults?
And General Cook, you have the first 90-second opportunity.
Well, thank you. I really feel that issue. I think we've neglected that issue completely. And as we grow as an economy, if we forget those that we leave behind, they will eventually, as you have just stated, well, they end up to being a more expensive problem down the road. We have to focus on that issue. We can't say that is not a part of who we are. And I would put, as I go through this concern that I have on education, and it's going to be a big one, because when you've neglected education for 17 years and you have to make up a $2.1 billion budget, it doesn't happen with $200,000 here and $300,000 there. That will be part of that discussion, because I believe we've got to start with our young. We've got to start with those that are missing the opportunities a lot of us have. We have to be one. And as we say in the military, we leave nobody behind.
And Governor Herbert, your 90-second opportunity.
Well, I think all of us understand and our hearts break when we see people in poverty. We have a country that's rich in abundance, and certainly our state is on the road to recovery. And so if we have even one person that goes without food, if there's even one person in poverty, it's one too many. I was down at the food bank here just a week and a half ago working there to help. And, as you see those boxes of groceries being put together, you know, it makes you wonder, why is that happening? It's really going to take a combination of efforts to make sure that we take care of those who are needy among us. I think the scriptures tell us the poor will always be with us. So the question is, how do we find the best way to find the solution for those who are needy? Government does have a role as a safety net provider, and we want to make sure that we're doing that in the best way that we possibly can. And we also recognize, though, that the first phone call probably shouldn't be to the federal government. It ought to be to ourselves as neighbors. Why? Because it's a much more efficient way to help people. If you need a dollar and I reach in my wallet and give you a dollar, you get the whole dollar. It goes through a government program, you get something less than a dollar in benefit. So it's a combination of both of those. The good news is growing the economy is the best thing I can do for those who are impoverished, making sure they have a job so they can help themselves. And again, it's working. The last 12 months, those who have accessed food stamps in our state have dropped 3.1%. For those, the last 12 months that have been accessing TANF, the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, has dropped 17.9%. So growing the economy is certainly a big part and parcel of helping those who are impoverished and those who are in need.
Rebuttal time, General Cook.
Yes, first of all, you know, that's one of the important pieces about this Medicaid extension. And I know that's something you're concerned about also. And we need to get that money back in. And I'm not saying that the federal government needs to step in. And I agree that each one of us should help as we move forward. But again, without education, you cannot have an economic development program. And without that, we can't move this tide up. That's what's important to realize. And probably the most important thing here is that we've lost, this economy has not recovered. In the last 3 months, we have started to see our unemployment go. And then we have 80,000 people still without jobs. And that needs to be taken care of.
Governor Herbert, your rebuttal.
I would suggest, if you wonder about the economy, and I believe it is true, it's certainly a part and parcel of our efforts to help the needy, just go to the Salt Lake Chamber of Commerce's webpage. And you'll find out if they've looked at the numbers over the last 4 months that we have numbers available. Our economy in Utah has grown at 3.2%, 3.0%, 3.6%, and 3.6%. Our historical average has been 3.1%. We've gone through the worst economic times in our state's history since the Great Depression. And we've gone through this trough, and we're out at the top now, peeking over the top. We've recovered. That's going to help our needy people among us. And our education has been a significant effort. I've said from the very beginning, we cannot have long-term sustained economic growth without a good education program. And we are doing that. We're having significant success in our educational efforts, more so the last 3 years than we've had in the last 10.
Let's go back to our studio audience and another question. And Governor Herbert, you'll have the first 90-second response to this.
Yes. Do you support marriage equality, that is, same-sex marriage? And if not, what do you support and what is your stance?
I don't support same-sex marriage. I think marriage is defined as a relationship, a marriage between a man and a woman. We have that's part of our Constitution. And in Utah, unless that Constitution has changed, anything akin to that will be rejected by our Constitution. That being said, I certainly believe that people ought to be treated with respect, and that their civil rights ought not to be violated when it comes to housing, when it comes to medical care, when it comes to business opportunities and job hiring. And I think in Utah we're doing a pretty good job of that. I like the approach we have here in the state where we have some equality laws that are coming from local governments and a bottom-up approach. I think that's the way it should happen. It's local governments are more close to the people, recognize their own community interests. I don't like the top-down approach. I rail against the federal government giving us a one-size-fits-all, whether it be on health care or on education or those kinds of things that we get from the federal government. Likewise, as a local government official myself in my past, I don't like the state telling the local governments what to do either. So, again, I think we ought to treat each other with respect and kindness and civility, but I do not support same-sex marriage.
General Cook, your 90-second opportunity.
Yes, you're correct. The Constitution limits us on that. But let me tell you what I am for. I am for a statewide non-discrimination law because, like anything anywhere else, you can't just have small communities put together non-discrimination laws. It's supported by the Chamber of Commerce. It's supported by the LDS Church. Let's be a state that shows and not just talks about non-discrimination. That is the next step. That's the next step a governor should do. That's the next step a legislature should do. That is not forcing things down. I'll tell you, I go to so many cities, and the questions they ask me are all the regulations that the state government is pushing down on our local government. This is not that. This is just showing we're a compassionate state, that we have the capabilities of reaching out and showing who we are and caring about equality and non-discrimination. Let's get that done and be proud state to be able to stand by that.
Additional time, rebuttal time?
Well, I don't know that there's a lot of difference between what Peter Cook's position is and mine. He's had a press conference to make sure that he's disavowed the platform of the Democratic Party that supports gay marriage. But I believe the approach is better from the bottom up. I don't know if he's speaking for the LDS Church now in a different capacity than I know, but I've never heard the LDS Church come out and say we ought to have a statewide law. What they have supported is the Salt Lake City approach, which is expanded to other cities having their own equality laws, which I think is the way to do it. So, again, I think he's overstating his position, or at least the position of the LDS Church. And I think the process we have in place, which is an evolutionary process, as the market bears and as people have a desire to make some change, bubbles up from the people and the local communities, and then will eventually go to the state.
General Cook, last word on this.
Yeah, I think that's kind of condescending. I will clarify that the LDS Church did support the Salt Lake City concept of having, non-discrimination. And I did jump to that conclusion. But I can tell you that to be a compassionate people, we need to make this move. And as a state, we need to show that. And that's important. And to be able to say that I disavow or anything else, I am a Utah, and I put Utah first. I'm a Utah Democrat, and I'm proud of that. And there are some things that I disagree on the federal level, but when it comes to non-discrimination, no American, no person. I fought for that in the military, and I think that's important. We do it in the military. We can do it here. And that's the way we need to go as a state.
Back to our audience. Another question from a student, and you have a number of questions written down there. I wonder if we could just probably get to that first one.
Okay. Utah's previous governors, Leavitt and Huntsman, were both against storing nuclear or radioactive waste here in our state. So why should Utah be the dumping ground for radioactive waste that other states refuse to take? And why are the dollars paid to the state worth jeopardizing the public health of Utah residents?
And General Cook, you'll have the first 90-second opportunity.
Right. You heard in my opening remarks that we have found nuclear waste right here in our state. And by the agreement with Energy Solutions, that nuclear waste cannot be put on our state without his signature. So that is horrible. And then to think that we would have put on the Energy Solution, somebody from the Energy Solution on the board to oversee that, to me again shows where there's extreme discrepancies on where we need to go as a state. We cannot be a dumping ground. We will not be a dumping ground under my administration, and that is something that Utah has to stand for because we've had enough of a problem with downwind. Now we've got side winds coming from the other side. That's got to stop. And that's where leadership, as I started from the beginning, is different than salesmanship. You got to lead forward. You cannot be having really a conflict of interest with businesses, and that is a prime example why there's a lot of people in the voting population don't want to really vote in our state, as you know, because they see things like this. That just gives confidence to my kids and everything else that there is not oversight, and you need a watchdog and you need balanced government, and that's how it happens.
And Governor Herbert, your opportunity to respond.
Well, this isn't a dictatorship. We actually are a state of laws and a federal government of laws. Whether Huntsman or Leavitt didn't approve of nuclear waste being stored in Utah, I let them answer that. What we do know is that they understood the rule of law. There's been a permitting process in place for over 23 years that's allowed Energy Solutions to take low-level Class A waste. It's identified by the federal government, it's labeled, and because of that, they are permitted to bring it here. It has nothing to do with me signing it. They have a right to bring it in as they're a permitted repository for low-level Class A waste. We have oversight responsibilities as our state, working with the federal government. The issue that took place here not too long ago, where we had some that got in that was mislabeled. It actually got reassembled and came back as low-level Class A waste, was a mistake made by the federal government, now the Department of Energy. It was our people out there working with Energy Solutions that discovered it in their sampling process and made them go back and do the sampling and look through all their computer data that discovered 17 different containers that have been scattered out there. We have good oversight. The public safety, health, and welfare has got to be the primary concern. But Energy Solutions, whether we like it or not, under the rule of law, has a right to be permitted and to store Class A waste. And they've got a certain finite capacity. Once that bathtub is filled up with Class A waste, it will stop and cease. And we'll probably turn over the responsibility to the federal government to maintain it from that point forward.
Rebuttal time, General Cook.
Yeah, first of all, to tell a general officer the difference between what dictatorship is and isn't, that's a very interesting point. I fought for a free country, so I understand that. But I do understand the principle of law. It's Class C. Class C was founded. And I will tell you, that is a serious oversight problem by the governor and by his radiation committee and everything else. That's a fact. Governor, you keep trying to push away from the facts in education and here, and you got to stop.
Governor, you have opportunity,
Peter,
to respond to that.
Yeah, sure. where to begin? I mean, you can distort the facts and draw incorrect conclusions. I don't stand out there with every trainload of waste comes in and stick my finger into the pot to see if it's. We have people that do that. There is a process set up with the federal government on how you, in fact, ascertain what the level of the waste is. Energy Solutions can take Class A waste. There's no question it was mislabeled by the Department of Energy. That's a federal problem. It's been discovered. We've worked with the federal government, and all people agreed it to the solution. The interesting is that the level of radioactivity has not changed at all out there. There is no public safety issue other than what there would be with Class A waste. And so this scaremongering that's taking place here is just unfortunate.
We have another question from a student at the University of Utah, and your subject turns on government itself and its operations.
The Utah Transparency Project, a project headed by University of Utah students, created a detailed list of best practices and changes that could be made in local government. However, change can also occur on a statewide level. As governor, how would you make state government practices and policies more transparent to people across the state?
And Governor Herbert, your first 90-second opportunity.
Well, we've done a number of things, and I had the same concerns when I came in as governor. And so we've created a UtahTransparency.com website where you can actually look and see where all the dollars spent, where it's being spent on, who's getting the money of our $13 billion budget. You can drill down and get very detailed analysis of how we're spending the money and what we're doing. Secondly, I called upon, when I came in, to find more efficiency in state government. Utah's always been recognized as one of the best managed states in America, but can we do better? So I tasked former Governor Norm Bangeter, along with Fraser Bullock, who helped with the Olympics, to get together a committee of people inside and outside of government and review every department, every cabinet member, every department and division head to see what we could do to optimize our services to the taxpayer. They found out that, one, we were pretty efficient, and two, they found out there was 56 different recommendations that we've, in fact, are implementing as we go through to, in fact, improve it even better. I think we've done some really wonderful things with state government, making it more open, more transparent, more efficient. We're one of only seven states in America that have a AAA bond rating. We've managed the money really well. And here's the good news. Not only are we efficient, we're doing more with less. We have 22,569 state employees. You have to go back to the year 2000 to find a smaller number than that. At the same time, our population as a fast-growing state is increased by 600,000 people. So we literally are doing more with less. The taxpayers are getting good bang for the buck. We've never had a government in our state's history more efficient than the government we have today.
And General Cook, your opportunity for a 90-second response.
Well, I think in my opening remarks, I showed all the different audits that are being taken on right now by the government, so I don't call that efficiency. Number two, the question is, can we be more transparent? Yes, we can, and we should. And that transparency starts at the top. And, you know, I want to tell you that under our administration, it will be transparent. There will be nothing that you will not know about what's going on in the governor's office. No secret last-minute meetings. No, I will not have monthly press conferences. I'll have weekly press conferences. And that is the only way we'll get confidence of the people to believe back in government. There is too many behind-the-door meetings, too many lack of opennesses. And I'll tell you another thing I want to do is I'm going to take our cabinet meetings throughout the state and let people in each part of our state to be open and see the transparency of our government and ask questions that we can meet and address. Because unless we get that openness in government, I don't care how efficient, I don't know who comes up with it, you're the most efficient, because I keep on finding reasons why we're not. But the point is that transparency has to occur. And my kids were asking me the other day, you know, Dad, explain to me what transparency means. He says, what I've learned in the military is you don't have to be wondering when somebody is not watching what you're doing. That's how it is. Government should be open. It should be to the people. We should be servants of the people. We shouldn't hide our information. We need to be there for you, and then you will be there for us, and we can get confidence and solve problems.
Rebuttal time, 30 seconds each. Governor Herbert first.
It doesn't surprise me, General, that you find problems. I mean, it's the political season. Your job is to find problems out there. I'm sure if I gave you a plate of donuts, rather than see the donut, you'd see the hole. That's just part of the silly season we're facing here today. We're recognized as a very efficient, well-managed state by people outside of our borders, people not running for governor. You know, being a good leader is getting good results and good outcomes. We're getting those. It's not an absence of problems. And we have rules and regulations and laws that we have to follow when we find problems. We discover them, we've taken corrective action, and we've got good outcomes and good results as recognized by people outside of our state's borders.
And General Cook, your 30-second opportunity.
I think, Governor, if you gave me a donut, I'd probably eat it. But I want to tell you the most important thing that I can say about the future of this government is that, you know, honesty and transparency comes out, and it's felt by the people. And then they get excited about being back in government. I don't sense that. And when we continually talk about how efficient the government is, let me tell you, when I was the Director of Economic Development for the state of Utah, Forbes magazine still rated us the best place to do business. Governor is taking credit all just in the last little bit that all these things have come down. I can show you year after year for the last 20 years that we've had those same kind of great remarks from Forbes and et cetera.
We are at the point where we have time for one more question. Unfortunately, I will have to limit your response time to 45 seconds only on this subject.
Okay. Concerned with Utah's environments, dirty air and dirty water, hurt our tourism and our business climates. If you're a governor, then would you lead in cooperation with Salt Lake City and Salt Lake County to reduce Utah's urban air pollution by reducing Utah's dependence on oil and cars?
And General Cook, first 45-second opportunity.
Absolutely. And we have to invest in mass transit. We cannot ignore the clean air. It's hurting our health. We have regulations from, believe it or not, I hate it, from the EPA, but they were saying if we don't meet that, we lose our highway funds. We have to address this issue again. Leadership versus salesmanship, head on. I support that.
And Governor Herbert, your 45-second opportunity.
The environment and certainly our air and our water, making sure that they're clean. We're working with Mayor Becker in Salt Lake City. We have our own UCARE program, which is emphasis on volunteer compliance, trying to change the culture. It's like learning how to recycle. You know, there's a few years ago we didn't recycle anything, now we're recycling. A few years ago we didn't use seat belts, now everybody uses seat belts. Some of it's just a mental change and a cultural change. We're leading that effort. Our state fleet's been converted over to many compressed natural gas cars. Our idling restrictions. We've invested $4 million in an airshed study out in the Uinta Basin to make sure we're dealing with the issues out there in the basin. I just went in Cache Valley with the Cache County Council, worked on the air quality issues up there. I've been out in Brigham City working on their issues. We're making a significant effort that all of us have a role to play. Not just government, but we as individuals and as businesses need to come together to clean up the air.
And we must now turn to closing statements. Prior to the debate, it was determined that Governor Herbert would have the first one-minute opportunity. No, that's not correct, is it? Is it Governor Herbert that's speaking? Yes, that's correct. Excuse me. Governor Herbert, you have the first one-minute opportunity.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate, again, the opportunity to be here and explain our visions that we have for the state of Utah as we go forward. I have a track record I'm proud of. We've had great success working together. When I first was inaugurated, I talked about unprecedented partnerships would give us unlimited possibilities. That clearly is working, as we see it, positive advancements in every area. Is it perfect? No. Have we stubbed our toes in a few areas? Absolutely yes. But is it better? Positively, it's better. And we have people coming together working, whether it be on education, whether it be on transportation, on health and human services, on energy development. In every visible area, we're having success. Now, people outside of our state are telling us about our successes, giving us accolades. Gosh, I don't know if it's bad that we've had them before. We're getting them again. That shows leadership. Leadership is about outcome and getting the right results. I'll finish by saying the Wall Street Journal, in talking about the successes of Utah, said that Utah is the brightest star on the flag. That's because under my leadership, we're coming together in unprecedented ways, unprecedented partnerships, giving us unlimited possibilities and tremendous success in this state. Join me in that effort. Vote for Herbert on November 6th.
Thank you, Governor. And now, General Cook, your one-minute opportunity.
I think the most important thing that could happen, as we talked earlier about salesmanship and leadership, is to have balance. Have balance in our government, where people can have open expression and we can feel that we're a part of a government that can make a difference. That is the most important factor as our next step in this state, is to bring back that unity. The issues that we have to solve, especially in education, we can do it. We did it in the Olympics, we can do it now. That will make this state that much better. The important reasons why I'm running is because that balance is, as a military person, I fought for democracy. I fought for that ability for have open expression and non-discrimination. I fought for the beliefs that we, each one of us, have, that we believe in this country for our children and our future. And all I can say to you, a vote for Cook and Rampton will mean balance, will mean an opportunity for us all to move forward. Thank you so much.
Gentlemen, thank you both for your time today. Utah's public broadcasters remind you Election Day is November 6th, and this year we encourage you to visit the Vote Utah website at voteutah.org for additional voting information. On behalf of Utah's public broadcasters, I'm Ken Verdoya. Thanks for joining us.
I'm Carrie Bringhurst. Thank you for joining us this evening for a Vote Utah 2012 debate. Support on Utah Public Radio comes from AARP Utah, publishing voter guides for 25 years. Guides and information on state and federal races are available at aarp.org/yourvote or 866-448-3616. And from USU's Department of Political Science, committed to improving the community, the state, the nation, and beyond, and supporting UPR's coverage of the Utah Legislature. Information is at politicalscience.usu.edu. For more information and a link to the Vote Utah 2012 website, go to our website, upr.org.